Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This podcast is also a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. I created Better Leaders, Better Schools because I was fed up of not having deep conversations, vulnerable, authentic conversations about school leadership. And that's why you keep coming back week after week. You listen to this podcast as an investment in your own leadership development. If you would like to invest in the production of Better Leaders, Better Schools, I have really good news. It's extremely affordable. $1 or $2 a month will go very far and make a big impact. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. To become a patron, it's easy. Just click the link in the show notes, become a patron. Thank you for investing in yourself, and thank you for investing in this podcast. Thank you for listening every week. Let's get this show started.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
One of the things that Mari and I struggled with is teaching is, I don't think anyone would fault me for saying this, but teaching is a daunting profession. There's a lot going on, and you have one of the biggest stakeholders in the future, the students, that you want to give your best all the time. But also being in your 20s, the one thing that Mari and I said was, like, you know, you graduate college where you basically have to ask to go to the bathroom, and then they give you a piece of paper that says you graduated, and now you're in control of your whole life. So it's a huge jarring change. And trying to be the adult in the room when you're barely coming an adult, being an adult yourself, that's scary.
Justin, thanks for staying on the show. We tried so hard to get this off the ground. The computer was shutting down. Then there was no audio, but you're still there. That says something about you. Is your middle name Perseverance by any chance?
It definitely, if you ask my friends, it is not patience. But in this case, I know good things come to those who wait. So I was willing to wait it out.
Man, I really appreciate that. So thank you so much. So, Justin, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. You're not the typical guest in the sense of a current principal or a leader in another organization, but you do lead in a variety of ways. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So like what you and I were talking about a couple minutes ago, and like you just said, I am not a school leader in the traditional sense. I'm a fourth grade teacher in a small rural town in Northern Virginia called Front Royal. This is my third year teaching, and I like to think of myself that I might not lead a school, but I lead a family, a little class family in my room. And we do all sorts of things, and we just have a great time, and I like to help the students grow. And so I am a leader in that sense, but maybe not exactly what they're used to on this show.
Absolutely. And I definitely believe that teachers are leaders. And I love that you described it as a little family. I mean, that was always my approach, that these were my sons and daughters, so to speak, at least while they were in my care at the school. And I know you have that type of connection with the kids as well. Can you tell our listeners what inspired you to get into education?
So I wasn't, you know, a six-year-old saying I'm going to be a teacher. That was not my path that I had decided on. One of my big passions in life, aside from teaching, is cooking. And I was going to go into the culinary field until about high school when we were, I don't even remember what class it was, but it was some sort of career ed class where we had to research our prospective careers. And I was looking into culinary schools and seeing six figures there. And I was seeing you'd have to work nights and weekends, and I wasn't about that life. So I decided, let's look what else I'm doing with my life and what I enjoy. And I had been volunteering with the Junior Achievement Program, and where high school students go into lower elementary grades and we teach students about different things. My unit happened to be a very simplified version of the economy. And I had been receiving all sorts of great feedback from my supervisor, the classroom teachers who had welcomed me into the classroom. And I really started thinking back. And I remember the people who helped to shape my life, specifically my second grade teacher, Mrs. Wendy Gessie. I always look back with fond memories. And I said, you know, I have a younger sister who's 9 years younger than me. So being in high school, she was about elementary age at that time. I actually was fortunate enough to teach her in her class, which I loved. Her, not so much.
Wow.
So it was a great experience, and I love connecting with the kids, seeing those aha moments. So that's what really inspired me into teaching. So I did a variety of different types of things like that in high school. And then in college, did a lot of different internships. I accumulated something like, 400 or 500 hours in different classroom settings throughout my undergrad experience. And then I graduated in May of 2013. And then I've been teaching ever since, and I absolutely love it.
I love that you gave a shout out to your second grade teacher. You know, I had an awesome experience first through eighth grade, but really the pivotal year for me was third grade, Mrs. Bierman. And I just remember her being such an amazing teacher, and my love for dinosaurs was started by her. And there were dinosaurs all over the room. We went to the museum in Chicago to check out, you know, all the dinosaur exhibits and that sort of thing. My first book I remember reading too was Danny the Dinosaur, and all that is from Mrs. Bierman. And was so excited when I got to go to her retirement party years, you know, just a few years ago, but and just honor her for her contribution to the class. So
yeah, it's great when you have the connection. I actually just talked to Mrs. Gessie the other day.
Nice.
I was at my parents' house for the holidays. And when I'm in the town, I have her, I don't even remember how I got her cell phone number, but we all text and say, you know, I'm in town. If you have a moment, I'd love to meet up and just talk. And unfortunately, we didn't make her paths cross, but on Christmas Day, she texted me, and I had gotten her a little stuffed reindeer back when I was in second grade, because we had a whole lesson on homophones, and she was talking about the difference between deer, like the animal, and deer, and she called me her deer boy to illustrate that. And she still has that reindeer hanging on her tree all, well, not too many years later, but a decent amount of years later, and she sent me the picture, and it was just heartwarming to show what kind of connection has lasted over the years.
That's beautiful. Let's stay with this warm and fuzzy feeling we're creating right now. You talked about creating a family environment with your kids, or that you like to do that. So what are the tips in terms of developing those type of relationships? Because, you know, to me, school, when you're leading it as a principal and administrator, it's just a bigger classroom. And so what do you do with your kids to develop those solid relationships that our leaders can learn from you?
Well, first and foremost, what I do every single day to every single kid is I will stand either at the door or as soon as they come in, I will go over and we shake hands every morning. We go through a little exchange. I say, you know, good morning. They say, good morning. I say, how are you? They tell me how they're doing. And then I comment on that. And then we've gotten into showing respect and manners, and they ask me how I'm doing. Then we just talk about it, and every time I try to go through and make some sort of connection. If a kid got like a haircut or is wearing something new, or there was something on TV, a couple of my students are really into Flash and Arrow. If I knew there was a good new episode on last night, or I knew they had a sporting event, I'll ask them about it. Just really show that personal connection. And then as they are leaving the day, I do this thing, and I totally stole this from Doug Robertson, the author of He's the Weird Teacher, where I, as they're leaving, I shake their hand again, and I say thank you for learning, and they say thank you for teaching, and then I wish them a wonderful evening. If I know some kids, you know, they have sporting events or practice, I say good luck at that. And then throughout the day, I'm doing things to constantly build their relationships with ourselves, and then also with each other. One moment came up today where a student was working on a free writing assignment, and he was writing about Star Wars Battlefront, the video game.
Yes.
And yeah, and I'm jealous because I want it and he has it. I have the original too, but I don't have the new one. And he was writing all about it, and so I was conferencing with him about it, trying to learn about it, and as I was walking away from him, I was like, you know, I know that girl over there really enjoys that game. I did say that girl over there, said her name. But I was like, you know, the two of you, who they're not enemies by any stretch of the imagination, but they're also not super close. So hopefully just laying that little seed helps them develop relationships amongst each other. And so I even surveyed them in the beginning of the year about all their interests, from the favorite TV shows, books, sporting events. That was mainly because I do a flipped classroom for math. So
nice.
I wanted to make the videos about their interests, but then that also gave me another window into what they're into. So really just developing the relationships with them, cluing in on what they know. But I can't underscore enough how important it is to greet and dismiss them every day. I know a lot of teachers make a point to greet them, but I think it's just equally as important to dismiss them, because you don't know what they're going home to. That could be the last good moment they have in their day.
Yeah, I want to make a connection and ask a follow-up question. The connection would be, I'm able to connect with my staff in some fun ways. And they're always like, how did you know this about me? But what they forget is at the beginning of the year, I have new staff members fill out an emergency contact form, right? Uh-huh. So just in case of emergency, we know how to get a hold of them. Something happens, you know, who's your medical provider, da-da-da. But within that, too, I asked about their favorite music, favorite book, movie, and their favorite snack. And around Christmas time, I went around to everybody on my evaluation list and had, you know, if that was barbecue Pringles or beef jerky or whatever. And the best thing ever, and I'm going to say his name because he told me to listen to the podcast, Matt Barrett, PE teacher at Brooks. This is a man's man, okay? He's a PE teacher. He's a big guy. He has a beard, bald head, right? So everybody has a visual of him. And I think his favorite snack was gummy worms. I gave Matt.
Not what I was expecting.
No, not at all. And I showed up to his PE class. And I said, Matt, come here. And he's like, he thought he was in trouble or something. And I just handed him the bag of gummy worms. And he goes, really? And he gave me the biggest hug ever. And it was just such a cool moment. Like, I never would have expected having that. And he's a guy. I like him a lot. And it was just neat to connect in that way.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds like a great moment. That reminds me of Mark French. What he told me once was he kind of what you're saying about how your students are the whole school. But then he said, like, he's a teacher, but his students are the teacher. So, I mean, you're illustrating that role very well there.
Well, I appreciate that. And I got so excited about my story, I totally forgot the follow-up question I was going to ask. But let's move into some of the connections that we made outside of this podcast. And I was very intrigued about how you get parents involved in your classroom and also parent tutoring. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I fully will adamantly say all the time that the parents are equally, if not more important in their child's education than I am, because you look at it, just clock hours, they're with me for 7.5 hours a day. They're with their parents and their families, whoever that might be, for the other, I'm not good at math off the top of my head, but I think that's 16.5 hours. And then weekends and summers and break. The families are huge in supporting them. And so right off the bat, at the beginning of the year, I work equally as hard to make the connections with the families. A week before school even started, I sent out a video welcoming both the families, or the students and the families, to the classroom. And then I had some tasks for the kids to do, and I had some tasks for the parents to do. And one of them was to register with my class messenger account so I could easily send them out messages. And I have a class Twitter and a class Facebook, so, you know, I'm meeting the parents where they are. And one thing that I notice in past years is that as teachers, sometimes we're quick to judge and say, you know, I'm sending home all these resources to help the parents, and they're just not doing it.
Right.
And so I thought about that. Our big class motto is, we don't make excuses, we make changes. So I was like, you know, saying that's just an excuse, what changes can I make? And I say, you know, I wouldn't just throw a worksheet at a kid and expect them to know how to do it. So why do we do that to parents?
Right.
So I started, and I remembered I had read a book by Ron Clark, and I love Ron Clark, and I read all four of his books. And I can't remember offhand which book it is. But in the book, he has a thing where he said he was going through the same thing. And he realized he needed to bring the parents into the classroom to learn the stuff. And so I thought, you know, that's an excellent idea. Why don't we do that? So I surveyed the parents. I started this last year, around this time, actually. And I surveyed the parents. I said, listen, is this something you'd be interested in? And I hit a huge, something like 75% of the class said, yes, this would be great. So I started structuring it, and we can get more into how I actually structure it. But basically, the overall gist is the parents come in, sit at the desks. I have yoga balls in my classroom, so some of the parents actually sit on the yoga balls, and they enjoy it. And I go through it, not exactly how I teach it to the kids. With the parents, I get into the more of the why the certain things work, because it all kind of stemmed from the way we have taught math has changed over the years. Even when I was in elementary school, we only learned the traditional algorithm. And now there's, you know, partial products, lattice box, still the traditional algorithm, arrays, all sorts of things. But the parents, by and large, have not been taught that way. So I brought them in and I explained, here's why I'm teaching Lattice. Here's how it's going to help your child. And then here's how you actually physically do it. And then I'm going to do a guided example where we're going to do one together. And then I'm going to throw up another example. You're going to do it. I'm going to circulate through the room and give you some feedback.
Love that.
And yeah, and it's great because the parents are seeing what it's like to be the student and learn it firsthand. And then feel free to stop me whenever you want.
No, this is good stuff because I think a lot of schools struggle with how to really engage their parents. So this is like a masterclass in it. So, you know, keep going with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I'll switch to talking about the actual methodology of what I do. So I send out, you know, who's coming, like an RSVP pretty much. Like I'm hosting the night. I only allot it for an hour until the end of the year. And I'll remind me to come back to that because there's a couple of fun ones I do at the end of the year. Not that this isn't all fun, but these are more where we get the parents and the kids involved. So it's an hour once every, last year I was doing it 3 times a month. This year I'm doing it 2 times a month only because I moved further away from my district. So I'd like to spend some time at my house. And so I bring them in and I have, you know, a presentation where I kind of explain, you know, an agenda for the evening. Here's sometimes we review different data points about their child and they all have their own individual folders based on their kid. And I then walk through, like I was saying with the Lattice box, here's why this works. Here's how it works. And so I'll model an example. They'll do an example with me and then I'll walk around and then I'll field any questions they might have. And then I'll show examples of from different assessments that students will be taking and kind of break it down. So, because I think there's kind of a stigma about word problems and just really showing them, breaking it down. It's, you know, if you think about it step by step, the word problem doesn't have to be scary anymore. And the other thing I do is I record it on Google Hangouts on Air. So if a parent can't make it to the evening themselves, they can always go back and watch the video.
Oh, nice.
And so that's one thing I know. It's, you know, you're never going to find a time where you can get 100% of your parents in there because sports and all sorts of different things. But I know parents will ask me, how do I access the video file? And I'm like, you just go to my YouTube channel. It's right there for you. So that's huge because if you can't just say, oh, the parent couldn't make it, too bad, they're not going to be able to help their kid. Then you're back into that making excuse thing. You got to make it as available to them as possible.
I love that too. And I mean, you're really meeting them where they're at and life comes up. So if they can't make it, you know, to your event, it's there for them where they can download and watch at their convenience. So that's just going above and beyond, but that's the type of guy you are. And I applaud you for that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
So you said to remind you about the end of the year. What makes that special?
Okay. So the end of the year last year, we did, like I said, I try to stick to an hour, but the last two, I call them homeschool connection nights, HSCNs for short. The last two homeschool connection nights of the year last year, the first one was I covered my entire Virginia Studies curriculum to help them get their students ready for the end of the year assessment. And I told the parents, I was like, I've never done this before, but I'm consolidating 400 years of Virginia history and 9 months of content into 90 minutes. So bear with me. And I just, it was fun for me. It was overwhelming for me, but I got it done. And I found it was actually really helpful because now I have a screencast of the entire curriculum that I'm teaching. So I haven't done it quite yet this year, but it's something I do want to do is I can tell students, like, you know, if you need a refresher on what happened or why, you know, something in our last unit, go watch the video I made from this minute to this minute, and that's going to be that whole unit. So that was, it was interesting because the parents were learned, they're like, you know, I've lived in Virginia my whole life. Mr. B, you've only lived in Virginia for 2 years, and you just taught me more about my state than I have ever known in the 30 plus years I've lived here. So that was cool.
That is
fun
cool.
Event.
Yeah.
It was also different because most of my nights are structured around reading and math, and history is one of my passions. So it was just fun that. And then the very, very final night, it was a 2 hour long event. I brought the parents in with the kids and we played the Hunger Games. And the way that that happened was there were math problems. Each partnership had a cup of Smarties and if the parents answered problems correctly or the kids answered problems correctly, they could go steal Smarties from other districts, if you will, to follow the Hunger Games theme. And it was just so much fun to watch the parents compete against the kids and the kids compete against their parents. And
yeah.
I gave each team, or like the kids, I think I gave them a head start and I gave them some advantages and the parents gave them some advantages. I was like, but you all were taught by me, so you all have the operating knowledge to do this. And then we had different challenges. We had one round where we did like a math fact speed round where the parents and the kids lined up in two lines and they faced off head to head. And it was just a blast. It was 2 hours. The kids loved it. The parents loved it. It was actually really sweet because at the beginning of it, and this was completely unbeknownst to me, one of the parents stood up and was like, oh, Mr. B, we'd really like to thank you for your time that you've poured into the Homeschool Connection Nights. And they gave me a Visa gift card and they gave me what was called the Declaration of Education, where all the students had written some memory from the year and they laminated and they typed it up, and I still have it hanging up on my wall even after I moved. But it was just a really cool way, and it set the tone for the evening. That the other Homeschool Connection Nights are a little bit more focused, a little bit more serious, but this one was, the kids were there, which the kids aren't there with the Homeschool Connection Nights normally. The parents were there, we were all just having a good time going through it, and everybody seemed to enjoy it. I know I did. I hope if any of my last year's class listens to this, they'll agree as well.
Really appreciate what you're doing there and the connections to pop culture too, and things the kids probably love in terms of reading the Hunger Games of books and watching the movies. So that just seems extremely engaging and really a lot of fun. And I could see the adults, the parents, the kids competing against each other, and just the energy in the room. It's awesome. So I had a quick question for you that I remember, which is good. Because I had it, I lost it, I was telling the story, I got it back. And I want to know more about your flipped classroom, because you said you teach in a rural school. And so my assumption, and I could be wrong, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but my assumption is that sometimes resources in a rural area are hard to come by. So what have been the challenges, if there have been any, to flipping your classroom, and how'd you get around them?
I was actually very fortunate this year. Of all my entire class, only one parent told me that their house wasn't wired for internet, and I was ready to say, no problem, if your child needs to watch it before school, when we're having our more, when the kids are being dropped off, he can watch it. But then she follows up, she's like, but I have data on my phone and I'll just up my data plan. So I thought that was pretty cool how she was willing to do that. So actually all my kids have access.
Nice.
The biggest challenge, I guess, is the kids remembering which video to do which evening and remembering to bring the video back. But I think you're going to have that kind of issue with any sort of homework assignment. But what I did to help everyone stay involved is on our classroom website. It's posted in like three different places. I use Class Messenger to remind the parents in the beginning of the week and then each night which video their kids should be doing. And the whole class holds each other accountable. We have a chart on our classroom door that we just basically make a bar graph of every day of who's done their flip notes. And then I announce it at morning meeting. Like yesterday, which was the first day that they had to bring in a flipped assignment for 2016. I was like, you know, those of you who did it, thank you. That's a really good way to start out 2016. Those of you who didn't, you know, that's not a great way to start off 2016. And then today, those who didn't have it the first day brought back both. And so then at morning meeting this morning, I said, you know, I was like, you know, some of you started off a little bit rocky, but you turned it around, and I'm appreciative of that. And you could see that they were appreciative of me recognizing them and the whole class. We strive for 23 out of 23 every day. And most times we get like 22 or 21 out of 23, because there's always going to be one child who, you know, for whatever reason might forget. But most of the time,
I thought you were going to say it ruins it for everybody.
I would never hold the whole class accountable like that. When we have 23 out of 23, we have an extravaganza. But most of the time, what happens is the kid will do the flip video, but just forget to bring their notes back from home.
Right.
And I can tell if they've watched the video by asking them a couple questions about it. But I think it all goes back to the videos are engaging for them because I base them on their interests. I've asked the parents when they come in for Homeschool Connection Nights what they're thinking of the flip videos. They say they enjoy them, because they can learn along with their child. And that's one thing I kind of struggled with this year, because this is my first year of a flipped classroom.
Okay.
And I was thinking if the homeschool connection nights were still even relevant and necessary because they were doing the flip video. But I figured, just like with the kids, you can't replace a face-to-face connection. I felt that it would be really important to have the homeschool connection nights, to have the face-to-face connection with the parents as well.
Let's stay there just for a second. You know, I hope most of the listeners know what a flipped classroom is. I'm assuming they do because they're listening to a podcast which has to do with technology. So, listener, if you don't know what a flipped classroom is, you have homework and go check that out. But, Justin, two quick questions. One, what's been the biggest or greatest advantage to flipping your classroom? And then two, you said you were a little nervous of doing it, if I heard you correctly. This is your first year. So what do you say to principals and teachers listening that want to try it, but they're a little anxious about it?
Yeah, so I'll go with the advantage, which will lead into the why the nervous and how to combat that nervousness. So the biggest advantage is the kids can be in control of their own learning and can individualize themselves.
Yes.
Some of this, and without the fear of being scorned by others, because they're doing it at their house. No one else knows if they had to watch the video one time to understand it or if they had to watch the video 30 times to understand it. And so that's a huge advantage, that they are comfortable, they can do it as much as they need without any embarrassment. And if some of the students, if they get the video and they can show me that right when they walk in, when we transition to our class math time, they can go work on their independent workstation. So that's a huge advantage. Some students, now I would never say it's an advantage to not have to work with a student, but some students have shown me that they understood like long division just from watching the couple of videos. And so rather than me saying, well, you know, you're going to work with me for X amount of minutes for a week, I'll tell them like, okay, you have the basic concepts. Let's extend your learning a little bit. And then the other flip side is if they bring in their notes, and normally I structure it where they have a problem at the end they have to bring back, and they have either a question mark written down or something completely wildly off, I'll say, you know, let's meet during math today and work on this. And then that will help them close that gap. So, and then for your second question about other teachers or administrators who are hesitant to implement a flip classroom, I would say go for it. I mean, the worst you can do is the students don't understand something, and then, you know, you just have to fix that. And it's no different than in a normal classroom. You could develop a really great, powerful lesson, and then a student doesn't understand, or a student or multiple students or the whole students don't understand, and then you have to redo it. And you can't think of it as they're going to watch the video at home and you're not going to talk to them. You're just going to put them right on workstation. That's not how it works. That's not how it should work. What it does allow you to do is what I was saying, kind of you can differentiate. If they get it from the video, great. If they don't, then you know that they have room to grow and you're there to help support them. So it lets me use my time effectively because before I was doing flipped classroom last year, I was doing a stations, and there'd be some students who understood the concept and I would meet with them the same amount of time as a student who didn't understand it. It didn't quite make sense to me. So, and then on the flip side, the student who didn't get it was getting it as much, getting more time with me as the student who did get it. So it didn't make sense. This way the student who doesn't get it, I can spend a lot more time with them. And the student who does get it, then I can help them extend their learning and they can kind of do a little bit self-leading. Or sometimes what they'll enjoy doing is they will see that I'm working with a group, and a student who has mastered the skill will say, would you like some help? Could I help teach one of the other students? I love playing the role of teachers. So the flipped classroom really kind of levels the playing field because they're all coming to me in that morning with the same amount of background knowledge versus, you know, based on how much they understood, but they're all coming in with the knowledge of whatever skill, depending how developed they've made that knowledge, but it kind of equalizes the playing field a little bit better.
So our listeners could obviously Google flipped classroom, but is there a resource that you highly recommend school leaders check out?
Well, I wrote a blog post for Participate Learning, but that's more how-to guide. But when I did flipped classroom, I got to give a shout out to Allison Curley on Twitter. She is at Teach Curley, TEACHKERLY. Maybe EY, I'll look that up then. She teaches fourth and fifth grades. And she was kind of my go-to person for how to implement a flipped classroom. So she was, but there's a big community out there. If you just on Twitter search hashtag flipped learning or flipped class or flipped really anything, but not just flip, because you'll probably find images of acrobats. So
you said Allison Curley?
Yeah, Allison Curley.
Okay. Yeah. I looked it up. So that is Teach Curly, L-E-Y. We'll have that in the show notes for the listeners.
Yeah. And then the article I wrote for Participate, that was a pretty in-depth how-to guide that's been received pretty well online. But I just talk about the method of how I flip the classroom. But with Flip Classroom, you can kind of curate videos that are pre-made, or you can create your own videos. And I really advocate for you to create your own videos. I use Explain Everything on my iPad. But the advantage to creating your own video, you can, like I keep saying, you can individualize the videos, but you can also teach it in the exact method that you want your students to learn.
That's awesome. I have your blog that I'm going to link up in the show notes, but do you mind after the interview, if you could email me that specific blog post? I want to highlight that specifically.
Yeah, that one's not actually on my own blog, but
look at you.
I know, but I'm going to write that down right now to email you that link. But yeah, absolutely. Participate's a great company to work with, and they asked me to write a piece on it, but I would be more than happy to share that out.
Yeah, we'd love to give that to our audience. That's very cool.
And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show.
So Justin, you are highly involved in Twitter, obviously, but you help host moderate a couple Twitter chats. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I love Twitter. I actually have only been on Twitter for about a year at this point, but it has been a huge game changer in my life. And I just love interacting with people. That's how you and I met, just through various chats. And so, like you had said, I co-created and co-moderate two chats, and both of them I co-created with Mari Venturino, who on Twitter is at MSVENTURINO. She's kind of my partner in crime on all sorts of different educational endeavors. So the first one that we have is hashtag Fly High Fry, which is every Friday. Let's back that up a little bit. So Fly High Fry, the basic concept that Mari and I came up with, and more credit to her, she came up with the idea and I kind of came up with a branding of it and helped spread the message. Basically, we saw that there's so much negativity in education and so much complaining and criticism, and we were sick of it because that's wasted energy in my mind. You can't waste your time on what's wrong. You got to put your time into making what's right. So we decided in our schools we were going to make Fly High Friday clubs where we'd get together on Fridays and celebrate the awesome things going on. And so Mari does hers at lunchtime with her staff. We were doing ours before school in the first semester, and now we switched to after school. And today was our first after school meeting. We had our biggest turnout of the whole year so far. So we're hoping that after school helps. So then we said, you know, why keep this at our two schools? Because my school's in Virginia and her school's out there in San Diego, California. So we said, let's bring it onto the Twitter community and see if they take to it. And so we just did hashtag Fly High Fry. We didn't do hashtag Fly High Friday because if you ever search that on Twitter, you're not going to get quite school appropriate stuff. So listeners out there, hashtag Fly High Fry, no day. Save yourself the trouble.
If you don't know what that means, email me at daniel@betterleadersbetterschools.com. I'll break it down for you.
Yes. Thank you for not making me do that. We just get together on Twitter with teachers all over the globe. I know I've seen tweets in other languages, so that's pretty cool. But we just get together and share the great things that's been going on in our week. A lot of people share pictures, videos, little snippets, anecdotes of what's happening in the week. And I go through and I read every single one of them, and I retweet every single one of them because I want to help everybody see all the awesome that's going on. One week, as kind of a way to try to get more people involved, I tweeted out that I would respond to every single Fly High Fry tweet that there was. And lo and behold, it happened to be the biggest Fly High Fry tweet or tweet session we ever had. We had over 700 tweets that week.
Wow.
And I responded to every single tweet that was out there.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. It was great. It was daunting. Like, I got home and for 3 hours I was sitting there responding to tweets. But I wouldn't trade it for the world because I got to learn so much about so many educators and so many schools, yeah. And it was awesome. I actually got locked out of Twitter for about an hour and a half because I guess I...
Really?
Yeah, it was weird. It said, like, I...
Was spamming or something, or...?
Yeah, I guess, because I looked into it, because I was like, I don't know how... You have a tweet limit per day, but then within that, they also break it down per hour. So I guess I had hit it because between I would retweet everyone and then respond to it. So each one tweet would be two tweets. So, you know, 700 times two, times two would be, 1,400 tweets, right, that I was trying to do in the span of a couple hours. So what I did was I just switched to the Fly, because we have a Fly High Fly Twitter account made. So I just switched that one and just responded from that for a while. But it was great. I don't think I will ever offer to do that again in the anytime near future, but it's been great. And the online reception of it has been great. It trended on Twitter every Friday in December, other than Christmas Day, but we didn't do one on Christmas Day because people should be with their families, not on Twitter. And then today, we did like a New Year's Day resolution one, but that wasn't a huge one. And then today, the 8th of January, it was trending. I don't know. Last I checked, it had been trending for like 5 hours. So it's cool. I just love seeing all the different things, and I invite all the listeners to join in on whenever the next Friday is after this is released, and just join in, share one positive thing, because I think if everybody, I mean, that's 700, that 1 week, that was 700 positive things that were shared. Imagine if every teacher who was on Twitter shares one positive thing. That's tens, or maybe hundreds of thousands, maybe millions. I don't know. I don't know how many.
We would break the internet.
Yes, and that's what we should be aiming to do. We should try to break the internet with positivity.
Because
there's too much negative out there. We need to change that. So that's one of the Twitter chats that I lead. I can talk about the second one.
Please do.
Yep. The second one is newer. That actually started this week, the week ending on January 8th. And that is hashtag Teach20s. And 20s is like 20 and then an S. That's not really related to Fly High Fry at all. But I think we talked about this before we started recording, but I'm 24. So I'm, you know, still in my early, well, I guess mid-20s at this point. But one of the things that, and I co-lead this one with Mari also, one of the things that Mari and I struggled with is teaching is, I don't think anyone would fault me for saying this, but teaching is a daunting profession. There's a lot going on, and you have one of the biggest stakeholders in the future, the students, that you want to give your best all the time. But also being in your 20s, the one thing that Mari and I said was, like, you know, you graduate college where you basically have to ask to go to the bathroom, and then they give you a piece of paper that says you graduated, and now you're in control of your whole life. So it's a huge jarring change. And trying to be the adult in the room when you're barely coming an adult, being an adult yourself, that's scary. And you don't have a lot of support all the time. You might have like a new teacher's academy in your school district where they help you with, you know, pedagogy and instruction and stuff, but there's not really a lot of mentorship on how to be an effective teacher while also being an effective adult. So Mari and I got to talking, and he said, you know, we should start a community based on this. So we started the hashtag Teach20s. There is a blog post on my blog about that where we kind of detail this a little bit more. But we did this one as a slow chat. So on Sundays, we post a question. This week's question was, what are the positive things about being a teacher in your 20s? And a lot of people are sharing a lot of great things. A lot of people are saying how it's a little easier to connect to your students because you're not too far off in age, especially if you're teaching high school. So a lot of teachers are sharing about the energy, and you have more time because you don't necessarily have a family started, and just all sorts of positive things about being a teacher in your 20s. And then we're going to flip it, a little preview onto this upcoming week, and we're going to talk about what are the challenges about being a teacher in your 20s. And by the time this releases, that week will probably have come and gone. But I'm willing to bet that I know, me speaking from my personal experience, it's hard to find a connection in school sometimes. When I started teaching, I was 22 years old. The next closest person in age to me was 27 years old, and she was already married and had kids, versus I was single, knew no one because I moved to a completely different state to teach. So I was isolated. I didn't have a support in growing up as an adult while growing into a teacher role. So we don't want people to do that. And so by building this online community, we can kind of help each other. And by no means am I an expert. I would not say that I adult efficiently by any means. So I'm growing into one, but I feel like this is helping everyone to grow. And it's not just for teachers in their 20s. We're having a lot of good feedback from teachers who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. I don't know how old the oldest person is, but if you're in your like hundreds and you want to jump in, we'd love to have you. Because, you know, it's great to have a bunch of teachers in their 20s, but we do need mentors. We need people who were there and who have been through and what helped them get through it. So it's slow chat. It's not a huge time commitment. Jump in whenever I'm normally tweeting out the image with the question on a couple times a day. But it's just a really good community, and we've gotten a lot of good feedback. Mario and I were joking, it took like 4 months for Fly High Fry to like trend, and on the first day of Teach 20s, it was trending for a little bit too. So, it's got a lot of good feedback from it so far. And again, just like with Fly High Fry, anyone who's listening to this, I encourage you to jump in, whether you're in your 20s or whether your 20s were more than 20 years ago, jump in, help us out. We can always use more support in the Teach 20s community.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for starting that, Justin. And then that's why I want you to share the second Twitter chat, because I'm making an assumption that my listeners are a little bit older, but if they are in positions of leadership at schools, they could recommend this Twitter chat to their younger teachers. Or if we have younger listeners, jump in, please, by all means. And then the other thing, too, is that you mentioned, you know, we're trying to figure out what it means to grow as a teacher, grow as an adult. And so I encourage my older listeners that have some experience and could share their insights into working in education or just life to hop in this Twitter chat. I know I'm going to check it out. I'm 37, so maybe I'll share a little bit of wisdom. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I will absolutely be looking for your tweets both for this week and next week's as well, and future weeks in addition.
So Justin, leaders lead up too, and you're a leader. And so even as a 24-year-old, you know, this is a opportunity to talk to school leaders, talk to principals, to administrators. So what would you tell them about new teachers entering the workforce? What do you need from leaders today?
From leaders, I need understanding a lot about like what we're talking about in the Teach 20s community. Is you need to recognize that we are just as effective teachers as the teachers who have been teaching for, you know, 20, 30 years, but we're also at a different place in our lives. And some teachers who are there from, you know, 7 to 7 every night, and that's me some days too. But I also want to develop an adult life and, you know, start a family eventually and buy a house and all that kind of stuff. And so there's a lot going on behind the scenes that the new teachers who are starting out, that they might not be as open for it. But I think I would appreciate if leaders understood and respected that and offered support, but also at the same time, if the teacher, you know, says, you know, I have this, just respect that. And also be respectful of different ideas and risk-taking, I would say, because, you know, not everything that you're going to try is going to pay off in dividends. There's some times with flip videos that I made something and the kids walk in and no one had the correct answer. And you know, that's okay. It's a risk that we took as a class, and so I just know that's room to grow. And so treating risk as something to be rewarded rather than criticized is something that's going to be hugely important, because if you just squash all the risk out of someone, then that's going to squash their drive, and then they're not going to want to better themselves. And another thing is leaders. I know you have leaders above yourselves, but there's a lot of data that is crunched all the time and numbers, but that leaves out the most critical data that in my mind. And the critical data in my mind is if the child enjoys coming to school. Because I know that there are teachers that I have met that might have, you know, 100% pass rates or 95% pass rates on the end of the year assessments, but then the following year comes and you don't see those former students visiting their teachers and thinking about the great memories they made. My classroom, I have this today. I was visited by half of my class from last year, who are now fifth graders, and made a point to come in and say hi at some point or not today. Do I have 100% pass rates all the time? By no means. Do I have, 30% pass rates? No, that would be a problem on the other side. But I think it's just really thinking about what kind of leader do you want to be? Do you want to be a leader whose legacy is left by high numbers, but a school whose students didn't enjoy being there? Or do you want to be a leader whose legacy is that your school is filled with a bunch of students who love to learn?
Well, and to put it another way, and just a challenge to all my listeners, think about your funeral. And if you were the numbers person, how many people are going to be there? As opposed to if you were the relationship person, how many people are going to be there to celebrate your life? So that may hurt a little bit to hear, but it's never too late to pivot and change. And it's always people first before numbers. And just to add to your risk-taking advice to leaders, if you're a listener of this show since the beginning, you know that this has been a common theme of the high-quality leaders I've been interviewing. If you're new to the show, you might not know that. But Justin, I just want to emphasize that we highly value risk-taking at Better Leaders, Better Schools. You don't know what's on the other side without taking risk, but those innovations, those breakthroughs don't happen by staying in the traditional model. And so you got to create a culture where risk-taking is okay. And as a leader, you need to talk about where you're taking risks personally and maybe professionally with the school, and then be vulnerable and talk about when you made a mistake and what you learned. Because that's why it's such a beautiful process. You learn something there, you tweak, you pivot, and you improve. And so that's what it's all about.
Right. Yeah, I absolutely agree. The teachers who have been cranking out the same worksheet and doing the same thing for the past 30 years, it's not good enough. Like, yes, it might be effective academically, but what, 30 years ago was before I was born. That's a heck of a lot of difference in the world. You got to do what's engaging to the kids today, and you got to constantly be taking a risk and trying new things. And then leaders, if one of your teachers takes a risk and it doesn't go well, don't berate them. Be there by their side figuring out, how can we fix this together?
Absolutely. And Justin, I'm going to take a risk and bust your chops a little bit and have a little fun. So I hope your game.
Absolutely.
You're taking a risk. You still have your Christmas tree up and it's January 8th. When's it coming down, Justin?
It is actually coming down tomorrow. My girlfriend and I have been talking about when to do it, but I think it is finally coming down tomorrow.
So good. Hey, and buddy, there's no shame in my game. Literally, I took down the tree yesterday. I should have been in bed. I took it down at 9:45 and drove it to some obscure park where we recycle trees in Chicago and got back home at about 10:15. So I don't know why I was struck by, I was inspired to take it down. So, I'm not much better.
That reminds me, last year, before my girlfriend and I lived together, I got back from my parents who live in Pennsylvania, got back to my apartment in Virginia at 10:45 at night. And I was going to go to sleep because it was a pretty decent long drive, but I had stopped and got coffee along the way, so sleep was not in the forecast. But I was just struck with such this is going to sound super corny, but Christmas spirit that
yes.
I put up in my tiny apartment, which is think of a standard classroom size. That was about the size of my whole apartment last year. I put up 1,400 red, green, and white Christmas lights with a staple gun at 2 in the morning. And I ended up leaving them up until May because it was just too much of a pain to put them down. I had a discussion with my girlfriend and tried to talk her into letting me do that this year, but we have a nice and classy place this year, so 1,400 lights weren't going to be going up.
Maybe 2016.
Yeah, there's always – that'll be my resolution.
Awesome. Hey, we're almost towards the end. We'll hop in a couple questions, but before we get there, I do want to at least promote the podcast you do. So briefly, can you share about what's the idea behind your podcast and where can people go to listen to it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I co-host with, again, Mari Venturino and Greg Bagby, who Greg on Twitter is at Greg Bagby, GREGBAGBY. We co-host the Edgy Road Trip podcast. And so what that is it's an educational podcast, and we are traveling. We're not physically traveling. We're pretending to travel to different, as you and I were joking before we started. We're not actually going to these locations. We are pretending to go to different locations to interview different guests in education and reflect on how that location can apply to education. So, for instance, we interviewed Mark French at Principal French on Twitter at the White House to talk about being a strong leader in a 21st century school. We interviewed Paul Solars, the author of Learn Like a Pirate, at the Geographic Center of the United States of America, because he has a student-centered classroom. So you see how they kind of tie in together. We interviewed Dave and Shelley Burgess a couple weeks ago. Their episode will go live in about 2 weeks. And rather than doing the traditional like Blackbeard's house, we did it at the House of Burgesses in Virginia. So, for instance, when we met with Principal French, we said about how the President of the United States of America has a cabinet. And we said, how does a teacher build his own cabinet around it? So we tie it into what's the location into whatever the theme for the episode is. And we also feature, you know, we give shout outs to different people. You should listen because I'm pretty sure you'll be getting a shout out in an upcoming episode. And yes, so stick around for that. And we highlight different apps and technology tools too. You can find us on Twitter. We're at Edu Road Trip, so that's EduRoadTrip, or you can visit us directly at eduroadtrip.com, or we are also on iTunes and Stitcher, so check it out. And I always say this in our episodes, but we also, and I'm sure you can attest to this, reviews and ratings on iTunes are super helpful.
Yeah, so helpful. It gives us a little iTunes juice and helps us stay relevant and reach a wider audience. So listeners, if you don't mind reviewing Better Leaders, Better Schools and the Edu Road Trip, we would just so appreciate that. It's very cool stuff, Justin. Have you guys made a virtual trip to Chicago yet?
We have not. We actually took it into, I think it's on our agenda, but I actually just mapped all the locations today. And we pretty much did state in California and the East Coast. And then the Geographic Center. We have a map on our website now of where the visited locations we've visited. But we'd love to have you on. We'll have to tie it into Chicago somehow.
Well, Midwest is best. And I was going to say, I know a guy in Chicago that is willing to be on the show. So that'd be cool.
We will definitely set that up.
Very cool. All right. So let's pivot to the end of this episode and just have a couple quick questions for you. What's one book that you think every principal should read right now?
Oh, that is tough. There's a whole lot of books that could be a whole nother episode. I guess I'm going to go with the book I'm currently reading. It's Creating Classroom Magic by Shauna Pollack. I think the building principals and administrators and leaders should read the book on and take it into how they can make their school a magic place and then distribute it to the teachers so they can make their classrooms a magical place. Basically, the premise of the book is she did a lot of research on Walt Disney and tied how he did certain things and was like, they sometimes call him like the greatest teacher. And so takes his lessons and ties it into what you can do in the classroom. So I highly recommend that book. It recently released sometime in December. I was fortunate enough to get a signed copy from Shauna. So absolutely a book they need to check out, Creating Classroom Magic by Shauna Pollack.
Awesome. We'll have that linked up in the show notes. Justin, what do you do for fun besides staple gunning 1400 red and white lights in your house?
Yes. What do I do for fun? I cook still, even though that didn't end up as my career path. I actually cook all the time. Sometimes not successfully. I've ended up in the emergency room like a year ago because I sliced part of my finger off.
Yikes.
I used to be a very avid runner and just someone who worked out, but that's one of my, and I kind of got out of it when I was working on my master's, but I finished my master's a couple of months ago. So I'm hoping to get back in that. I love spending time with my girlfriend and our cat. He's turning 5 in a couple months. So he's adorable, a big movie fan, especially the Avengers movies. I know that makes me sound like a 12-year-old, but hashtag teach 20s.
Hashtag awesome. I mean, I yes. love comics. That was my first job, was in a comic book shop counting inventory. So not to steal your thunder, but Avengers, go for it. Yes.
Yeah, that is jealous. You should have made sure that you always counted the inventory minus one so you could keep one for yourself.
Well, I had a pretty sweet deal because the owner of Fat Dutchie's comic book shop in Palatine, Illinois, Chuck, if you're listening, love you, man. He paid me just basically that way. So maybe he knew I'd steal him if he didn't. But he let me pick really as many comics as I wanted to take home. Gave me $5 and bought me lunch every time I came in and did that.
I mean, that's a pretty solid gig. So now I have a question for you.
Yes. Flip the script.
Absolutely. I flipped my classroom, got to flip the podcast too. Marvel or DC?
You know, I currently am more into DC because I get mad that Marvel Comics cost more.
So you're doing the economic side of this.
Yeah. So I really want to be reading Avengers and X-Men, and I grew up with Spider-Man and Todd McFarlane, if you ever saw his artwork before he did Spawn. Just amazing stuff. But, you know, I've always been a huge fan, obviously, of Superman, Flash, you know, all those guys, Green Lantern, Batman, every Batman, Detective Comics, you know, all that stuff. So I think DC, plus DC has a sort of, you get to grow up with them. They had the Vertigo line, and I read Sandman and those type of comics as well when I was kind of in my teen dark phase. So yeah, I think I'd go with DC.
Yeah, teach there. And I'm more of a Marvel guy myself. I did the reverse. I got the movies and then I went back to the comic books. So personal choice, two different flavors of ice cream, but you know, ice cream is wonderful no matter what flavor it is.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I really, honestly, I love them both. I do. Mm-hmm. So, and thank you for not hanging up with me when I said DC. You're like, forget that.
It was close. We interviewed Doug Robertson and he said Marvel, and I was like, that was a wise choice because we would have never released your episode if you had said DC.
Good. I'll keep that in mind. Very cool. So we talk about Twitter. You talked about Google Hangouts on Air. Is there any other tech resources that you highly leverage in the classroom that school leaders should know about?
Really, anything with Google Drive and Docs and Sheets and Sites and anything related to Google, there's so much versatility you can do with it. Again, that could be the third episode after talking about the educational books. We're talking about just Google. But there's just so much out there that, you know, put the kids in control and find what they can do. But we can do one tool that I've been enjoying on Google Docs is called DraftBack. And it basically takes the revision history of every Google document and it turns it into a little movie. So the kids can see how they're writing and if they're going back and adding detail and all sorts of stuff. And I use Autocrat to individualize assignments and shoot it right to the students' Google Drives. So there's just a whole bunch of different stuff out there, and you just got to really dive in to whatever is available and make it yours. You don't have to use it in the prescribed method, but there's just a heck of a lot out there to use. So there's anything Google is really I'll put my Mr. B stamp of approval on it.
Cool. And I haven't used that app, the Drafts app, but if I'm hearing you correctly, you could see the changes that you've made. And I like that because it demystifies the idea that great writers write it well on the first shot. And nobody does. Everybody writes a really terrible first draft. And through hard work and feedback and multiple drafts, you actually create something special.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly how I'm all told the kids. I'll take like a blog post that I wrote for my own blog, and I'll do it on Google Docs, and I'll show them the end result, the published pretty one, and I'll show them that it started as a skeleton, and then it just expanded out of there, and I kept coming back to it. So, yeah, it's huge, great tool, holds the kids accountable. They love watching their own videos and seeing how much detail they can add into their own writing.
So this is like the Ultron to the Avengers question, and we're gonna end it here. But you are building a school from the ground up. You are not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you, Justin, create the school if you were given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
I actually literally built a dream classroom the other day for my Google Innovator application, so I was well-versed in it. You're going to need three elements. You're going to need an abundance of effective educational technology, and tied in with that would be the know-how and the willingness to use it. So that could be Chromebooks. I'd advocate for multiple projectors and smart boards, different things, different forms of robots, just all sorts of technology so the kids can get it on their level because you can individualize it pretty well. Also, the second element you would need is an abundance of students to have choice. And that's going to come in a variety of methods. It's going to be choice in their seating. If it's a yoga ball, beanbag chair, one of those, I don't remember what they're called, but they're like wobbly stools, even traditional chairs, yoga mats, anything. They need their choice in reading if they want to use whatever books, if they want nonfiction chapter books, whatever. And also, you know, choice in math if they want to do it, manipulatives, different digital, physical, all that kind of stuff. And then the third element would be, I don't know what the third element would be. This was game changer. Posters of the Avengers on every wall. No. Third element, I would say, would be, you think, are you talking this has to be physical things or like metaphorical things?
Anything, buddy. Anything.
All right. Well, then I'm going to go with, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this, enough adequate support for all teachers. And that's going to be in decent class sizes, in, you know, co-teaching models, using planning time wisely. So I would say that those would be the three things: an abundance of effective technology and the know-how to use it, of abundance of ability for the students to have choice in things, and an abundance of adequate support for the teachers.
Love it. Justin, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, parting words of advice is, I'm going to totally steal this from Nike, and it's going to be just do it. You know, you should always be in beta and trying new things. It's not okay to do the same thing year in and year out. So just come up with something new and do it. You need to be a lifelong learner. Best way to contact me is going to be on Twitter. On Twitter, I am at Mr. B Teacher. So that's at MR_B_teacher. I have a blog, blog.justinburkbeckler.com. I'm sure you'll have that in the show notes, so I don't have to try to spell Burkbeckler for everybody.
Yeah, we'll have it in show notes.
Yeah, the podcast, the hashtag Teach20, is hashtag Fly High Fry. You can send me an email. It's contact, contact at justinburkbeckler.com. But reach out to me. I'm open to any sort of conversation. I like having conversations on Twitter, having real conversations, getting into the issues. But yeah, Twitter is going to be the fastest way to reach me. I'm seem to be on that constantly, especially on weekends. But yep, I'm looking forward to interacting with anyone who's listening today.
Very good. Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Justin. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Justin in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. On most mobile phones, you could tap the cover art and the show notes page will magically appear. Justin, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Well, thank you very much, Dan, for having me. It was a pleasure being here.
Hey, Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.